Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Our first guest today is Chris Schroeder. He is the author of the book Headscape, How a Bald Guy Replanted His Hair and Restarted His Life. It is a very entertaining and fun look at what can be a serious subject. And as we talk with him, I hope you'll join in. Are you bald? Do you have thinning hair? Does it affect how you see yourself, perhaps? Maybe what do you want to know about hair transplants? I'd love to hear from you. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Chris Schroeder, welcome to the show. Great to have you with us today.
Thank you, Larry. So happy to be with you.
Oh, I'm telling you, I really enjoyed your book. It is always fun to read a book where you suddenly find yourself laughing out loud from time to time.
Well, that's good. It seemed like a serious subject at first, but the more I delved into it, I realized that there were a lot of humorous anecdotes associated with my hair journey, and then I thought it would be more entertaining. So thank you for confirming that.
Oh, man, yeah. I mean, there's serious notes in your book for sure, and a lot of really interesting and good information, but it's always nice to be able to kind of laugh along as you're reading. And you, I mean, hair loss has really bothered you. I mean, early on, not now, but early on.
Yes, I had my best hair day in seventh grade. Yeah. And then in eighth grade, it actually started to rise up on my forehead. I started to see my widow's peaks forming all the way through high school and college. And, you know, we're all men are visual and we wear clothes up to our neck. And really all we have to show a lot of times are our hands and our face and our hair. And so what I thought was a nice feature of mine, my hair, I like my hair. It started to leave me and I hated it going so soon. It made me look older and it kind of affected my self-confidence and in a big way. So I really kind of struggled with it I was bald for 30 years, but it affected me and I thought it affected other people around me, but I learned a little bit more about that.
Yeah, you sure did. I wonder, maybe it's because you were losing your hair at such a young age. I was, you know, like in my early 20s before somebody pointed out that I had a bald spot starting on the back of my head. And I actually rushed to the mirror to see because I wasn't aware of it at the time.
Well, my mother, it's something we never talked about. I never talked about it as a teenager, certainly, but my mother did. She brought it up and she took me to her dermatologist and said, "What's going on with him? I don't want him to look like my father-in-law." And her father, contrary to old wives' tales, my mom's dad had a full head of hair, but my dad's dad was bald. And so the dermatologist said, "No, this is a classic case of male pattern baldness." And this was in eighth grade. And he said, "You know, you're going to lose your hair. Get used to it." And I never did.
No, so there's various things that we do. And you talk about over time and kind of comb overs. And what I often do is I wear a hat, a cap most of the time.
Yeah, I did the comb over for a number of years. And then in my mid to late 20s, I realized every time I jumped in a pool or a cold wind blew, I was unveiled. And then one day I was hiking in the mountains and got a sunburn on top of my head. I wasn't wearing a cap. I thought my hair would protect me, but not my comb over. And so I came back from that, I cut back my hair and removed the comb over. And what I revealed what I call the Julius Caesar look, where it's a kind of a laurel wreath around my head.
Oh, man. You had an interesting observation, I thought. And by the way, this is kind of a memoir, I guess, of you and your hair. But you talk about your life quite a bit, and I kind of chuckled at one spot where you said most of your dates, the dates you had, you noticed their fathers.
Yes. So my first marriage, my wife married me when I and started dating me when I had a full head of hair, and then by the time we divorced in my mid-30s, I was bald. And I kind of joke about how she went on to date people and marry people with great hair. So I started dating in my mid-30s. And, you know, women talk about guys when they describe them to their friends on referral, which I was, tall, dark, and handsome, or he's got great hair. But you never hear them say, he's got a great bald head. So I was a little insecure by that, but I just, you know, forged ahead, and I found some women of different ages, above my age and below my age, were attracted to me and happy to go out. And the four or five I dated, you know, in the first few years, when I went home with them to visit their house, I looked at their family photographs and looked at their fathers and noticed all four or five had dads with bald heads. I was like, uh-oh.
Chris Schroeder, our guest today, the book he wrote is Headscape, very entertaining. And the subtitle is How a Bald Guy Replanted His Hair and Restarted His Life. Very entertaining book. You can join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas at WPR.org. Let's take a call. Guy in Madison will give you a chance. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I wanted to talk about how you don't miss the water till the well runs dry, and you take your hair for granted. Not only does it provide you insulation against these horrible winters, but in the summer, you have to worry about getting sunburned head without your hair. And then the other, on top of that, the mosquitoes end up finding all kinds of places to bite you that they never had before.
And boy, Guy, thanks for calling. We have plenty of mosquitoes. Comment, Chris.
Yes, Guy, the top of my head was a beacon. It was like a lighthouse. And I was, you know, the most evident, I thought, in every photograph, because everybody, all my friends had hair. And then there was this bald head with a bright spot in the middle of the photograph. And so, but I noticed if I bumped my head or fell down or had mosquito bites, you know, they went right for that. And so then I would, you know, display a scab or some bumps or things. And on a bright head, they were very prominent. And so, yes, I learned to wear hats every time I went outside after that big sunburn I had in my mid-30s.
Oh, man. So talk about how the idea of having a hair transplant was proposed to you.
Well, I married my wife, Jan, in my mid-40s, and I moved to her house and then started walking down the street to her barber. I mean, a barber on her street. And I he began telling me that I had very thick hair in the back of my head and that I should become one of his special clients that he took to Istanbul every year to transplant their hair from the side of their head to the top. And I thought that was just silly. I told him I was probably too old for that and probably couldn't afford it. But he, over the years, kept telling me every time I got my hair cut that I should go and what I was missing. And each time I'd come home and tell my wife, Jan, and she would say, oh, that does sound crazy. Well, one time I came home in my early 60s and I said that Kevin had mentioned it again, my barber. And she said, oh, you know, that really sounds kind of interesting. And I'm like, what? And he said, I've never seen you with hair. And I said, well, my kids don't even remember me with hair. So we started, that began the research, and we looked at the clinic that he would take me to in Istanbul. I talked to people who he had taken before and was greatly reassured by their experience. And so I decided I'm in. Why not? And so at age 62, I went with my barber and as a tag along, my brother, to Istanbul for a 3 or 4 or 5 day trip to a beautiful city. And it was wonderful to tour it. And it's become the center of hair transplantation in the world for a number of reasons. It's also coincidentally the least expensive, which might have a contributing factor to it. But they're very advanced, very good, and very inexpensive relative to other places. And so it's a one day surgery. And they, you know, they put local anesthesia and they kind of get out this microscopic tool and start removing one follicle at a time. And they can take this hair from your head or from your neck or other parts of your body and place them on top of your head. And in the afternoon, they plant them. They just go through and start punching and planting with local anesthesia. I never really felt anything. I heard a sound like a melon being punched, but it was very unusual. And then the next day I had, you know, all these little hairs all over my head that I never had before.
Well, it, and we're talking one hair at a time. We're talking about 5,000 hairs.
It's amazing. There were three technicians working on me at the same time, and they, in 3 hours, they extracted 5,000 follicles, and in 3 hours, they planted 5,000 follicles. It was quite amazing. It was hard for me to believe, but during the break at lunch, they had stored them in a tray and on some gauze and with some solution, and I looked at them, and there were a lot of thousands of hairs there. They sort of look like salmon fillets. I was very kind of surprised, but just little pieces of hair. But they do a lot of, the technology has changed so much in the last 10 or 20, 30 years. It used to be they did hair plugs or whole strips they would move to the top of your head. Of course, they had powdered wigs in the 1700s, and they have toupees and the old comb over and the hat. But the technology has changed so much in the last 10 years, and it's become advanced and safe and very successful because they learn the DNA of the hair follicles on the side of your head is different than the ones on the top of your head. And so when the testosterone in the male body mixes with the DHT in your body or in your hair shaft, the hairs, the DNA on top of your head reacts differently than the other hairs on your body, and they dry up. And they shrink, and they eventually the hair falls out. And so they finally discovered if you move the hair from other places, that hair has different DNA, and it would take root and grow.
Our guest today is Chris Schroeder. His book is called Headscape, How a Bald Guy Replanted His Hair and Restarted His Life. I hope you'll join in with your own questions, comments, or thoughts about thinning hair or baldness. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau's our producer today, Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Talking today with Chris Schroeder about his book, Headscape, How a Bald Guy Replanted His Hair and Restarted His Life. It's great to have him with us today. He's in a publishing firm called The 100 Companies. And I believe you have a newsletter in Wisconsin, right?
Yes, we have one called the Wisconsin 100, and our special feature of our newsletters across the country is that every article is exactly 100 words, the 12 stories in there. So it's a quick, easy read, and really on different subjects like history and subjects. So we have one in Wisconsin, and we have a lot of readers there. We're very thankful for it.
And I remember reading in your book that when you were thinking about having hair on your head, a lot of your clients that you work with are younger men, and maybe even a majority young women. And you thought changing your look might help in terms of being a, you know, a salesperson to these people.
Well, I the newsletters, I often partner with a firm in different cities and states who own a PR firm, and the public relations firm industry is primarily populated by women, and the owners of most of the medium to small firms are women in their 30s or 40s who have left a large firm and started their own. But I noticed as I flew around the country and met with them, I'd walk in and they, you know, would accept a meeting. But when I walked in, I thought in my self-conscious way that they would look at me and kind of go, oh, okay, first thing they would think, old and bald. Well, let's see what he has to say. So sales, as you know, is removing obstacles to close. And I thought maybe if I replanted my hair and moved it around and had a head of hair, they would at least say, not say bald, they would just say old.
Just an old guy, but not an old bald guy.
Exactly.
Oh, and gosh, the, I laugh when I...
The ironic thing is that when people saw me afterwards and saw my new hair a few months after I had my surgery, everyone, my friends, family, people I did not know too well, but had known me before, they looked at me and were so curious about what happened to me, but they could not recognize what the change was. But they all to a person said, you look so much younger than you used to. What happened? Did you lose weight? Did you get a facelift? You look 20 years younger. And so I actually ended up being not so old and not bald.
Well, and I remember you writing that you sort of made a game out of it with Jan, your wife, complimenting other people when you meet them to try and get a reaction back from them.
It was really amazing. You know, we would run into people and they would just stare at me, and they looked at the top of my head, which is what they used to do when I thought they were looking at my bald head. And so I figured the first thing people catalog, you see people in your catalog in your memory, what people look like, and you connect a name. So I just thought people looked at me and say, bald guy, that's Chris. And so we would wander around the neighborhood or go to parties and they would say hello. And then they would just have this puzzled look in their eye. And only of the hundreds of people we saw in the following months, only two or three or four immediately recognized that I had changed my hair. And it was really fascinating. So we had a great game. We would just sit there and smile and laugh and say, what? They'd say, you look so different. What did you do? And I'd say, what do you think? What do you notice different? And we would test them, and they failed the test on almost every case.
Oh, man. Let's go to Dennis in Two Rivers. Dennis, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for the show about transplanting hair. Thank you for welcoming me on Garden Talk.
Well, thanks for joining in. What's okay on your mind today?
Okay, well, I've heard, maybe it's an old wives' tale, but I've heard wearing a cap or a hat makes baldness worse. And the whole thing kind of reminds me of something that could be a parody of an Eric Clapton song. With the lack of curls, you'll never date any girls, Rogaine. With that bald pate, you'll never attract a date, Rogaine. Don't cry, don't deny, just go by, Rogaine.
Oh, man. Well, Chris, do you have a comment about that?
Well, I think it's a trade-off. I think if you wear a cap a lot, and some people do as a rule, it does hold in the moisture and the heat. But I think the doctors say it doesn't necessarily hurt your hair because your roots are pretty tough. But if you kind of pull it across your head and things, it could damage them a little bit. But I think afterwards, immediately after the surgery, they like for the hair to breathe and they like for the hair to be massaged. The hair likes massage on the top of your head. So it is a kind of a combination of trying to protect your hair and your head from sun and potential melanoma, and also just giving it room to breathe. But I don't know that they've actually proven that hats hurt hair. But they have said that it does help to have your hair get some air and to breathe and to get a little sun and a little bit of massage.
Well, the little Rogaine song reminded me that at one point in your sort of bald state, you thought that you, and others, I think, too, that you looked like James Taylor, the singer.
I got stopped many, many times, and people would stop me and say, are you James Taylor? And it happened at concerts. It happened at dinner. And my wife would just roll her eyes because Jan thought I did not look like James Taylor. But I had this going on for decades. And one time I was at restaurant in, I guess it was Ontario, Canada. And a woman came up and she was staring at me the whole dinner and at another table. She kind of came over and I was like, here we go. And she said, I have to tell you, you look. And I was like, I know, I look like James Taylor. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And she goes, no, you don't understand. I'm a yoga teacher and I'm a yoga teacher to James Taylor and you're a spitting image of him. And so my wife finally said, okay, I guess this is true. I also freaked out his brother one time, Livingston Taylor, walking into a concert in a small bar. And he looked at me and thought I was, for a moment I was his brother. But now that I've got my hair back, I've given up my career.
Oh, man. Let's take another call. Wendy in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Your turn. Hi, Wendy.
Hi there. Say, I love this, and I can't wait to buy your book. My son started losing his hair at age 18, 19, and all the things that you're talking about. I called a place in Minneapolis called Bosley, who does essentially what you just described, but they said that they would not do it until a person is at least 23 years of age for reasons, I guess. They said that, you know, if they did it and then it started to lose somewhere else, it could cause a problem. I'm wondering if you can speak to that at all about companies that do it here. And kind of scary, I said something to my son and he said, I don't know, is Turkey really a place you want to go right now in the news? So, but thanks for your book and I can't wait to read it.
Oh, thanks a lot for calling. Go ahead, Chris.
Yes, there are a lot of healthcare medical transplant clinics in America, Bosley being perhaps one of the best known. And there are other ways to offset it. We've mentioned Rogaine. There are companies like Keeps that are advertising in other places. But I grew more comfortable with the idea of going to Istanbul because my barber assured me, he goes there three times a year, assured me it's very safe. And very professional. And I was really overwhelmed how great it was. It is a strongly ruled company by one sort of dictator who is elected, but it is a very safe country. It's right next to Greece. A lot of people say it's has the as beautiful a coastline as Greece, but for half the price. So Istanbul is a beautiful country. Constantine built a lot of walls there that are still existent, and it's right on the edge. It's divided by Asia and Europe. But there are places in America, they are more expensive. And even in Turkey or in America, it is uneven as the delivery of the service. So you want to get the best doctors and the best service, and you want to find their comments and the referrals. And I did my research, and I actually found that the people I talked with, the ones who had been to Istanbul were happier than the ones that went elsewhere in Canada or the U.S.
And I suddenly lost my train of thought. I was going to.
Well, I was going to address the age issue.
Yes,
charted the Hair Restoration Replacement Society, which is a British nonprofit worldwide. They actually charted all the people who are patients. And most of the patients are in the 20 to 40 range, but they begin at age 18 at a large percentage, and they kind of are evenly distributed all the way until you get to age 60, and then it drops down to zero. So I was very much an outlier going at age 62. I do wish I had begun at age 18 or 29. However, my continued receding of my hairline, I would have had to gone back a number of times to keep up with the pace of the departure. So I was able to do it once and stay with it. But no, if the research says that people of all ages go, and primarily peaking in their late 20s to early 40s, and 25% of the patients are women.
Yeah, and let's address costs. That was one thing I wanted to bring up, because for you now, this happened just before COVID struck, or that you went to Turkey, and the cost, what was it, $7,000? something like that?
So my barber told me when he first started talking to me, it was $5,000. And then later when I finally went, it was $7,000. But that included airfare, round trip, hotel, meals, and the surgery. And he gave us tours of the whole city and got us at the front of the lines to see all the wonderful places. But it is less expensive by a large shot. It's the research shows that you can pay between $1,000 to $2,000 to $3,000, depending on how many follicles you move in Istanbul, whereas the same surgery in America might cost $10,000 to $20,000, if not more.
that is a big difference. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Your time in Istanbul, you started on the wrong foot because on the flight over, you were having drinks with your brother on the plane.
Yes, one thing Kevin, my barber host, did not tell me ahead of time was you cannot drink for a day or two or so before surgery and not immediately after for a few days or a few weeks. I didn't know that. Alcohol can interact with the follicles and, alcohol has many, some good things and a lot of bad things about it. But one of them is that before surgery, particularly in your scalp, you do not want to be drinking alcohol immediately before or after. And a lot of doctors afterwards will prescribe different medicines. The ones that I worked with in Istanbul, they did not actually recommend any prescriptions afterwards. I was surprised. They only recommended one vitamin called Priorin. And I looked at the bottle, and it's primarily one element, an old world grain called millet. And millet, they studied, and it has the attribute that the chemicals in millet will actually go toward your scalp and help nurture hair that has just been replaced by surgery. It, for some reason, helps it heal much faster and much better. And he says you don't need to take it beyond 2 or 3, 4 months afterwards. It doesn't really help anymore after that. But the coincidental thing was that I actually had been taking, I like to eat these seed bars. One of the primary elements of those, in addition to pumpkin seed and other things, was millet. And they often will warn you after your surgery, the hair follicles will have some trauma and they may fall out a few days after the surgery, but they grow back 2 or 3 weeks later. I told the doctor, I've not had hair up here in 30 years. Mine's not going to fall out. And in fact, mine did not fall out. It kept growing the whole way. And the doctor was kind of surprised, but it does happen in many cases.
And you had your, and they said, take one every day. And I think you had a 90-day supply you bought while you were in Turkey. And
yes. And so I took, that's all I took. And after a few days, you wait until you shampoo, but really nothing changed after that. It was quite amazing. And I had to send a photograph to the doctor every day to show the progress and to make sure there was no irritation. And so as much as I did not like taking photographs of myself or being in photographs because of my bald head, I suddenly had to go through a ritual regimen of 30 days of photographs. And that led to a discovery which did change my life.
Yeah, let's talk about that. And it kind of relates to the next guest who's going to be on the show. But explain what happened.
So, I really shied away from photographs because I just didn't like the way I looked. But I had to have a regimen. And so each day I took a photograph once or twice a day and sent it to my doctor over in Turkey. And he would tell me it was looking good or whatever. But I noticed after a couple of weeks that I began to see a spot on my shoulder that wasn't there in the photographs from 2 weeks earlier. And this was in March 2020, April 2020, just as COVID and pandemic was starting. So I actually had time to sit in my mirror and look at myself and look at the photographs. And I sent them to my doctor, my general practitioner at home. And he said, you need to go into the dermatologist tomorrow. And I did. And they did a biopsy and discovered I had melanoma developing on my shoulder. And so I had Mohs surgery a few weeks later to remove it, and they got all of the melanoma out. But while I was in the surgical chair, I started talking to her about a spot that had always bothered me on my nose that dermatologists always dismissed. They thought it was a freckle. And I said, it bothers me because I know where I got it from playing golf one time in Arizona 30 years ago. And it always changed colors a little bit. I just always thought it was, you know, not a good look. And I thought it might be dangerous. And so she told me, go back into your dermatologist, get that biopsy, which I did immediately the next day. And even though they were skeptical, that came back as melanoma. And so I kind of laughed because here I was messing with Mother Nature, changing my genetic makeup and putting hair on top of my head to make myself look better and to take care of my self-assuredness and self-consciousness and vanity, if you will. And here Mother Nature had the last laugh. You know, you're going to make yourself look good with hair? Well, we're going to go in there and we're going to tear up your nose and get the cancer out and then put railroad tracks of stitches over your nose for a few weeks. And so I kind of had to laugh at myself. But eventually we've got all the melanoma out and all is well. But in that sense, had I never gotten hair surgery, I may never have noticed that I had melanoma.
Yeah, it's amazing. And you have a lot of photos in the book, which is kind of, to me, interesting. You even have one of you with after the nose surgery.
My friends told me I should not put that photograph in there, but I try to tell the good and the bad in this story.
It was seeing you now and looking at that photo. It's obvious. I mean, it was terrible in the photo, but now your nose looks just fine.
Yes. And again, it's all vanity, but healthcare, we're living longer and the sun is getting brighter and certain genetics are more prone to melanoma than others. So it's good to keep an eye on your skin.
How was the sort of the growing out experience? What was it like a bit, Chris?
So after, you come back and the hair is very, very short because they want to cut it very tight to be able to move them all. But then it starts to grow. And then 3 to 4, 6 months later, you know, it looks like a good head of hair. And but I wanted to go a full year. And it turned out pandemic. I went 6 months without anybody seeing me other than Jan practically. So I said, I'm going to go 365 days without cutting my hair because I wanted to see how long it could get and what would happen. And Jan thought I was entering crazy old man territory by the end. But I finally, 365 days later, got my hair cut and have been doing it ever since. And people still just all my friends who are in healthcare, doctors, they were like very, very pessimistic about me going. They advised me against it. They said, this doesn't sound like it's going to end well. Don't go. But they're now among my biggest supporters. They were surprised and they admitted they were wrong.
And you saw a lot of other people as you walked around in Istanbul. There were a lot of other people with kind of turbans on their head.
There are hundreds of hair transplant clinics and other medical tourism that's big in Turkey. But yes, you can see the telltale signs of other men and women who are walking around with very short hair and a little bit of scabs for the first few days on their hair and a little bit of wrap around their head for the first 2 days. And you see them wherever you go because there are thousands of them each day in Turkey. And you go back to the airport and it's so interesting. You stand in line at their brand new airport at the time. And you see other people looking just like you going, you can't speak the same language, perhaps you're going back to your different countries, but each of us were on our own journey on our way back home to be a different looking person than before. And I think it was really kind of a kinship that we all kind of just nodded and winked at each other like, yep, we're going back looking different. How's it going to be? And it was fun.
And the business in Turkey, you report, I can't remember what the extent of the business, but it's over $1 billion in Turkey, isn't it?
Yes, it's up well above that now a few years later. But it's going so quickly that the Turkish government 5 or 6 years ago wanted to protect it. So they regulate it and they inspect it and they try to certify the proper technicians. They try to make sure that the ones who are not trying to make a quick buck and moving in on a growing industry are not able to practice. But so they, in addition to hair transplant, they have a large number of medical tourism issues along with plastic surgery and other things. So yes, it's again, do your research. You can look at the websites and look at the patients they have and talk to other people. But I can speak well about the one I went to.
And the experience of writing the book, this was your first book. I thought it was kind of interesting that you talk about how this wound up to be a book.
I had so many friends that at first they would say, you got your hair transplanted. And then their next most interesting part that they really wanted to ask more about, why did you go to Istanbul and what was that like? And so I realized everybody had so many questions. And I said, you know what, I'm going to write a short magazine article or an essay just to give to people. And as I sat down to write it, I began to fill in more and more anecdotes, beginning with my very first haircut at age 3 and ending with going to reunions and looking for people to make a response to my new look. And when I finished it, I realized I have written a book, and that was on my bucket list to write a book. And I've always wanted to. I just never quite had the discipline or the time. And I realized I enjoyed that experience so much. That's why it sort of restarted my life, is it showed me that I can write books and I can write humorous books. And I want to write 5 or 6 more.
Well, I tell you what, if you give me a call the next time you're writing. When your next book comes out, because I'll be eager to read it. It was this was a very entertaining book. And, you know, I laughed a lot, but there's some serious parts in there. It's a really great description of your time in Istanbul and we learn a lot about your life. A lot that we didn't discuss, of course, today on the show. In the end, you're really glad you did this. Right.
I am so happy. This is the person I thought I would be looking at in the mirror when I grew up. The other person I did not recognize. So I'm happier with myself. And I realize that most men do not talk about this. You know, Joe Biden doesn't talk about his hair transplant. No. Elon Musk does not talk about his hair transplant. They won't answer questions about it. But I thought I'm going to talk about it, and I'm going to help other men and women who don't want to talk about the subject, even though it really troubles them inside. They suffer quietly and worry about it. And so I feel like this is sort of a new mission for me, is to help other people approach this subject.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Chris, for taking time to be with us today. It was a real pleasure reading your book and a real pleasure talking with you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Larry. I appreciate the interview.
Chris Schroeder, our guest, the book that he wrote is titled Headscape, How a Bald Guy Replanted His Hair and Restarted His Life. Take a look at it. You're going to really enjoy it. And I am willing to bet you will get some really good chuckles and probably, like me, laugh out loud at times in his book. Chris Schroeder, our guest. And we're going to stay a little bit with this because dermatologist Apple Bodimer is coming up next. She'll talk a little bit more about hair loss, thinning hair. There's reasons beside genetics that are responsible for it. And visit with her and answer your questions about that. And I want to ask her about dry skin because I have it. And we'll take a look at melanoma, too, along the way, I think. That next, I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.